All right, let's jump into injection molding post-processing.
Sounds good.
You've given us an article titled, What are the best practices for managing post-processing in injection molding? It seems like a great place to start.
It is, yeah.
So we're going to extract the best techniques from this.
Okay.
So that you can improve your product quality.
Great.
And also your efficiency.
Perfect.
And honestly, these small steps, they can make a huge difference in the end product.
They really can. They really can.
I'm really excited to get into this with our expert.
Me too.
They've seen firsthand how these techniques can make or break a project.
Oh yeah, for sure. Post-processing is often where the magic really happens.
So the article jumps right into cooling.
Right.
And it really emphasizes this initial step.
Yeah, it's super important.
Would you say it's almost like the foundation of a good injection molded part?
Absolutely. It really is the foundation. You see, cooling isn't just about like solidifying the plastic, you know?
Right.
It's about controlling how quickly that happens.
Okay.
And get this.
Yeah.
Cooling can actually take up to 80% of the cycle time.
80%? Wow. That's
big.
A lot.
It is.
I was working on a project once where these intricate gears,
okay,
they just wouldn't mesh properly.
Oh, no.
And it was driving us crazy.
Yeah, I bet.
We finally realized it was uneven cooling that was causing all the problems.
Makes sense.
What kind of problems have you seen when cooling goes wrong?
Oh, you name it. I've seen it. Warped phone cases, brittle medical devices, you name it. Inconsistent cooling really throws off dimensional accuracy. Just think about it. Different sections of the part are shrinking.
Right.
At different rates.
Yeah.
And that leads to warping, twisting, all kinds of headaches.
So that's impacting not just the way it looks, but also how it functions.
Exactly. It can be a big deal.
Especially with, you know, precise parts.
For sure.
And also defects, too, like sink marks and voids.
Oh, absolutely. Uneven cooling creates stress inside the material, and that makes it, you know, prone to imperfection.
Okay, so this is like a big deal, right?
Sure.
We're talking like major quality issues.
For sure.
So how do we prevent all this cooling chaos?
Right.
The article mentions a few best practices, right?
It does.
So what are they?
Well, the first thing is good design. Aim for uniform wall thickness if you can.
Right.
So that allows the heat to dissipate evenly.
Okay.
And that reduces the risk of warping.
Makes sense.
And also reduces those internal stresses we talked about.
So it's like designing for cooling right from the start.
Exactly. You got to think about it from the beginning. And then we've got cooling channels in the mold itself.
Okay.
These circulate coolant.
Right.
Which draws the heat away from the part.
So it's like creating escape routes for the heat.
Exactly. That's a good way to think about it.
The article mentioned conformal cooling channels. What are those exactly?
Those are special. They're designed to hug the contours of the part.
Wow.
They provide targeted cooling exactly where it's needed. It's like a custom fitted cooling system just for that part.
So you're not just like blasting the whole mold with coolant.
Right.
You're being much more strategic.
Exactly. It's much more controlled.
Okay. So I imagine that's like super important for complex shapes.
Absolutely. You need that control for complex shapes. And then there are some even more advanced techniques, like variothermal molding.
Uh-huh.
This one alternates between heating and cooling cycles.
Wow. So you're heating and cooling.
Yep. To achieve very specific effects.
Okay. So when would you use something like that?
Variotherm is great for enhancing surface finish.
Okay.
And for really precise details, it's often used for like high-end products or parts with intricate shapes.
Gotcha.
And then you have pulsed cooling.
Okay.
That's where you control the flow rate of the coolant.
Right.
To really fine-tune how that heat's removed.
So it's like you're fine-tuning the cooling process.
Exactly.
For maximum precision and control.
You got it.
It sounds like there's like a whole science to cooling.
There is.
It's not just like letting the part solidify. Nope. There's a lot to it.
Okay. So we've laid the foundation with cooling.
Right.
But even with perfectly cooled parts, there's still usually some extra material that needs to be removed.
Often, yeah.
And that's where trimming and deburring come in. I'm sure you've got stories about, you know, those little bits of plastic causing big problems.
Oh, I do. So many stories. Trimming and deburring are all about getting that smooth, perfect finish.
Right.
The finish we all expect from injection molded parts.
Right.
But choosing the right technique is really important.
Okay.
It's not one size fits all.
So let's break down the options. Some people still use manual methods, right?
Definitely. For small batches or delicate parts, manual techniques are still the way to go.
Okay.
Things like files, sandpaper, or scrapers can offer that level of control.
Right.
You know, you just can't get that with machines.
It's the handcrafted approach to post-processing.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about precision.
But it's probably not the best way to do it when you're making a lot of parts. You're right about that. When you need to produce hundreds or thousands of parts, manual methods just take way too long.
Right.
That's where mechanical deburring comes in. Things like tumbling.
Okay.
That's a little rock polisher for plastic parts.
Wow.
You put the parts in a rotating barrel.
Right.
With like abrasive media. And it gently smooths down all the surfaces.
Wow. So it's like the machine is doing the hard work for you.
Exactly. So much easier.
What are some other mechanical deburring techniques?
Well, there's brushing.
Okay.
That uses rotary brushes for a smooth finish.
Right.
Really good for removing burrs from edges and hard-to-reach spots.
Gotcha. So those sound pretty straightforward.
Yeah, they are.
Are there more advanced methods out there?
There are. One really cool technique is thermal energy deburring, or TED.
TED.
Yeah. So imagine this.
Okay.
A burst of intense heat that just vaporizes the tiny burrs. Super precise.
Wait, so you're using like fire to get rid of burrs?
Basically, yeah.
Wow.
It's really effective for getting those hard to reach spots.
But that sounds like a little dangerous. No.
You're right. Safety is super important with any post-processing technique, but especially with TED.
Yeah.
You need trained personnel and strict protocols for safe operation. And then there's precision grinding.
Okay.
Which uses grinding wheels or belts.
Right.
To remove excess material.
I've heard of that for metal parts.
Right.
Is it used for plastic too?
Mostly for metal, yeah.
Okay.
But it can be used for plastic when you need to get super precise, like really tight tolerances.
So it's all about precision.
Exactly. When precision is key, that's what you use.
Okay. So choosing the right deburring technique really depends on what you're trying to achieve.
It really does.
But, you know, deburring isn't the only thing that affects how a product looks and feels.
Sure.
We also need to think about surface finishing, which can really take a part from functional to fabulous.
It really can. It can totally elevate the part.
Surface finishing is where the artistry comes in, wouldn't you say?
I would, yeah. It's like taking that raw, deburred part and giving it that final touch.
Yeah.
And it's not just about how it looks either.
Okay.
Surface finishing can make it more durable.
Okay.
Improve how well it works and even how it feels in your hand.
It's like adding that extra layer of sophistication.
Exactly. A touch of class.
So tell me more. How does surface finishing impact all those things?
Okay. Well, let's start with how it looks. The right surface finish can make a product really pop. You know, whether it's a vibrant color, a sleek texture, or a nice gloss.
Yeah.
It's like the difference between a plain t-shirt and a fancy dress.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I get.
And then there's durability.
Okay.
Think about outdoor furniture or like car parts.
Right.
They have to stand up to the elements. So certain surface finishes can protect against UV, light, moisture, and scratches.
Oh.
It's like giving your product a suit of armor.
So it's not just about looking good. It's about like staying good looking.
Exactly. It's got to last.
Then there's functionality.
Right.
How does that play into it?
Well, a rough finish on a tool handle gives you a better grip.
Oh, yeah.
While a smooth finish on a moving part reduces friction.
So it actually impacts how the product performs.
It does. And it's really important to think about industry standards.
Okay.
And safety requirements when you're choosing a finish.
Right.
Certain applications like medical devices or food packaging, they might have very specific regulations.
Yeah, you don't want a finish that's going to like flake off into someone's food.
Exactly. Not good.
Okay, so we've talked about cooling, trimming, and deburring.
Right.
And now surface finishing.
Uh-huh.
These are all super important for getting that perfect part. But how do we actually make sure it really is perfect?
Good question.
I'm guessing that's where inspection comes in.
You got it. Inspection is our quality control checkpoint.
Okay.
It's about catching any flaws before they reach the customer.
Makes sense.
You know, that way we can avoid costly recalls.
Right.
Or safety hazards.
So it's not just about how it looks. It's about making sure it works properly and is safe.
Exactly. It's about making sure it's right.
So how does this inspection actually happen? I imagine it's more than just a quick glance.
It is. It starts with the basics, visual inspection.
Okay.
A trained eye can spot tiny flaws, color inconsistencies, or surface imperfections.
Right.
You know, those little things that might be signs of a bigger problem.
It's like having like a human quality control superhero.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
But even a superhero has limits.
Right.
So for really precise measurements, we use dimensional inspection.
Okay.
With special tools to make sure the part matches the design exactly. things like micrometers and calipers, you know, measuring down to like a hundredth of a millimeter.
Wow. So you're making sure everything is the right size and shape down to the tiniest detail.
Exactly. We got to be precise, but sometimes we need to go even deeper,
What do you mean?
literally deeper, inside the part. That's where non-destructive testing comes in, or NDT. These techniques let us see inside the part without damaging it.
It's like giving the part an X-ray.
Exactly. It's like X-ray vision.
What are some examples of NDT methods?
One that's really common is ultrasonic testing.
Okay.
It uses sound waves to find internal flaws or voids.
So it's like how doctors use ultrasound to see inside the human body.
Exactly. Same principle, different application. So we've got visual inspection for surface flaws, dimensional inspection for accurate measurements, and NDT for looking inside the part.
So how do all these techniques fit into the overall inspection process?
Well, a good inspection process usually has checks at different stages, starting with pre-production inspections,
Right.
making sure all the molds and machines are in perfect condition before we even start.
So it's like setting yourselves up for success
Right, from the very beginning.
before you even start making parts.
Exactly. You got to start
Then
right.
as you're actually making parts, you have what?
In-process
In
inspections. Yeah,
process.
to monitor for consistency and catch any potential problems early on. Real-time monitoring systems are great for this.
So you have like a quality control team on duty, constantly monitoring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Always watching. And then finally, we have final product inspections,
Okay.
a thorough check before anything leaves the factory.
Like a final seal of approval.
That's it. But with so many parts, I
Right.
imagine that can be, you know, pretty time-consuming.
Know that.
Thankfully, we've got technology to help us out.
Okay.
We're now seeing automated inspection systems
Oh, wow.
that use cameras, sensors, even AI to detect defects
Yeah.
super fast and accurate.
Like robot inspectors?
Haha, basically. They work 247. They can analyze huge amounts of data
Okay.
instantly and flag anything that's off.
So that saves time and money
Absolutely.
and also improves quality.
It does. It's a game changer.
Okay, so we've covered a lot.
We have.
Cooling, trimming, deburring, surface finishing, and now inspection.
It's a lot.
It's clear that every step is super important for getting that perfect injection molded part.
It is.
But things don't always go as planned.
True.
So what are some challenges that pop up during post-processing?
Oh, even with the best plans, you're going to run into some challenges.
All
But
right.
don't worry, most of them have solutions.
Okay, good.
Often pretty creative solutions.
So let's dive into some of these challenges
All right.
and see what those solutions are.
Sounds good.
What are some things that can trip people up during post-processing?
Well, one common one is material inconsistencies.
Okay.
Different batches of the same material can behave differently during post-processing.
Oh, right.
It's like when you're baking and you find the batter is thicker than usual, you
Yeah.
have to like adjust your recipe.
Right,
So you
bro.
have to be ready for those
Makes
variations
sense.
and have a plan B. And that's where simulation software can help.
Okay.
These tools can actually predict how a material will behave
Wow.
during post-processing. Helps you avoid those unwanted surprises.
So it's like having a virtual test lab for your parts.
Exactly. You can
Yeah.
test things out digitally. And another common challenge is getting those specific surface finishes.
Right.
You know, we talked about how surface finish can affect everything,
Right.
but getting that perfect smoothness or texture
Yeah.
or color, it can be tricky.
Sometimes manual sanding isn't enough.
It's not, no. For those cases, you've got things like chemical smoothing
Okay.
or bead
That's
blasting.
chemical smoothing.
That involves using a chemical solution to dissolve a thin layer of the material surface.
Oh, interesting.
It's like a gentle chemical peel, but for plastic.
I like that analogy.
So it's a very precise way to smooth things out.
And what about bead blasting?
That's different. It uses tiny beads at high speed to create a texture on the surface, good for enhancing grip
Okay.
or covering up imperfections.
So it creates a different look and feel.
It does. And for really consistent finishes across a lot of parts, we're seeing more and more automated tools.
So it takes the human element out of it.
Or at least minimizes it
Right.
for better consistency and efficiency.
So what other challenges do you see a lot in post-processing?
Time management. People often underestimate how long post-processing will take,
Right.
especially for complicated parts
Okay.
or multiple steps.
I can see how that would throw off your schedule.
Definitely. That's why it's crucial to really understand how long it's going to take. And to factor that into your plans, automation can really help here.
Okay.
Automating tasks frees up your skilled workers to focus on the more complex stuff.
So it's about working smarter,
exactly,
not harder.
You got it.
And using technology to help you.
Definitely. Things like automatic cleaning systems.
Wow.
Or robotic arms to move parts around.
Okay.
These things can really speed up your workflow.
It's all about using technology to help your team,
right,
not replace them.
Right, right.
But even with the best technology and processes in place,
yeah,
there's still that human factor.
For sure.
How do you make sure quality stays top-notch through the whole post-processing stage?
Quality control is super important.
Uh-huh.
You need checks and balances to make sure each part meets the standard.
Right, right.
It's not just about catching a defect here and there.
Yeah.
It's about building quality control into every stage.
Okay.
And once again, technology is really helping us out here.
Oh, how so?
Advanced imaging systems can analyze surface defects in detail.
Wow.
And AI algorithms can detect tiny problems that people might miss.
So it's like having a digital detective on the case.
Exactly. Always on the lookout.
And these systems, they don't just find defects, do they?
No, they do more than that.
They also help you prevent them from happening in the first place, right?
They do. They collect data.
Right.
And that data can be used to improve the process itself.
That's fantastic. But all this technology must be expensive, right?
Well, yeah, it can be.
So how do you balance the need for efficiency and quality
mm-hmm.
with, you know, the reality of costs?
That's the question everyone's asking. It's a tough balance. Mm. But there are tools and strategies that can help.
Okay, like what?
Well, there's software that can analyze your costs.
Okay.
And pinpoint areas where you could save money.
Makes sense.
They can track how much material you're using,
uh-huh.
your labor costs, energy consumption, all sorts of things.
So it's like having a detailed breakdown of where your money's going.
Exactly. You can see exactly where it's all going.
And then figure out where you can cut back.
Right. Without sacrificing quality.
It's about working smarter.
Always working smarter.
From the factory floor to the accounting department.
Exactly. It's a whole company effort.
Okay. But cost optimization, it's not just about cutting corners.
Right.
It's also about finding ways to be more efficient.
It is.
And that naturally leads to cost savings.
It does.
And that's where lean manufacturing comes in.
Lean manufacturing, that's the key.
We've mentioned it a few times.
We have.
But can you give me like a crash course on it? What is lean manufacturing really?
It's about eliminating waste. Anything that doesn't add value to your product is waste.
Okay.
It's about streamlining things, giving your workers more power, and always looking for ways to improve.
So it's not about just working faster.
Right.
It's about working smarter.
Exactly. It's about being efficient.
You know, you mentioned the 5S system before.
I did.
It's amazing how something as simple as like organizing your workspace
right.
can make such a huge difference.
It really can.
A messy workspace leads to so many problems.
It does. Wasted time, mistakes,
yeah, right.
even accidents. Okay. But 5S helps you create a much better environment
okay.
where everything is in its place.
Right.
Tools are easy to find
mm.
and work flows smoothly.
It's like creating a sense of order that leads to more efficiency.
Exactly.
But 5S isn't just about the physical organization, right?
No, it's not.
It's also about the processes.
It is.
And like creating a culture of improvement. Okay, but even with technology, streamlined workflows, and a well-organized space,
mm-hmm.
there's still one more piece to the puzzle.
There is.
Resource management.
That's right. Making sure you have the right people,
right.
the right equipment,
yeah.
and the right materials.
All when and where you need them.
You got it.
It's like conducting an orchestra.
I like that.
Making sure everyone's ready to play.
It really is. And it all starts with having a skilled and well-trained workforce.
Okay.
Your people are your most valuable asset.
Right.
You need to invest in them.
Makes sense.
And give them the training they need to do their best work.
So it's not just about initial training.
No, it's on.
You need to keep them up to date. Right.
Exactly. The industry is always changing.
Yeah.
So your team needs to be able to change with it.
What about equipment?
Equipment management is crucial.
Okay.
It's about keeping your machines in top condition.
Right.
Regular maintenance, preventive repairs, and replacing things when you need to, just like taking your car in for regular tune-ups.
I like that analogy.
It prevents those major breakdowns that
right.
can really slow you down. And then, of course, there's materials management.
Yeah, making sure you have the materials you need when you need them.
Exactly.
But also not having too much inventory.
It's a balancing act.
It is.
But thankfully, there are software programs that can help.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They can track how you use materials,
okay.
forecast your future needs,
uh-huh.
and even automate your ordering.
So you don't have to worry about running out.
Exactly. No more last-minute panics. So when you manage your people, your equipment, and your materials effectively,
Right.
your post-processing operation will run smoothly and efficiently.
Sounds like a recipe for success.
It is.
But we need one more thing.
Oh, what's that?
A plan.
A plan.
Post-processing plan.
You're right. A good plan is essential. It keeps everything on track,
Okay.
ensures consistency, efficiency, and quality.
So it's taking all these things we've talked about and putting them into action.
Exactly. It's like a roadmap to success.
So it's not just about knowing the
Oh,
steps,
well.
it's about having a plan that outlines those steps.
Yeah, it is.
Who's doing what and how you're going to maintain quality,
That's it.
like a recipe for post-processing success.
I like that. And just like a recipe,
Yeah.
a good post-processing plan should be detailed,
Right?
specific, and easy to understand.
So anyone can follow it.
Right. It should list the tools and materials for each task,
Okay.
the quality control checks,
Uh-huh.
and even the documentation requirements.
So it's not just about getting the work done.
No, it's more than that.
It's also about documenting it
It is.
and making sure everything's transparent and accountable.
Exactly. A well-documented process is essential,
Okay.
especially for meeting those industry standards and regulations.
It's about creating a system that's efficient, reliable, and auditable.
You got it. And when you combine that with everything else we've talked about,
Right.
the technology, the lean principles, the resource management, you have a powerful formula for success.
A formula for transforming raw parts into amazing products.
That's it.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. But the real magic happens when we apply all this knowledge to our own specific situations. So before we move on, I want to leave you with a question. What's one post-processing technique that you're excited to try or improve in your own work?
What's going to make a difference for you? What are you going to try?
Think about it.
Post-processing is a journey. It's all about learning, experimenting, and always trying to get better.
So embrace the challenge. See what incredible results you can achieve.
You can do it.
We'll be back soon with part two of our deep dive, where we'll explore even more strategies to optimize your post-processing operations. Stay tuned.
It's going to be good.
It is.
Welcome back.
I'm ready for more. You know, last time we talked about those, like, aha moments. When you realize how these small details in post-processing can really affect the final product.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. But it got me thinking about, like, the bigger picture. How do we optimize the whole workflow to be as efficient as possible? It's like fine-tuning a race car.
It is.
Every little tweak can make a difference.
Absolutely. Optimizing the workflow is about getting that perfect balance.
Okay.
Speed, quality, and cost effectiveness.
So it's not just about working faster.
No, it's not just about speed.
It's about working smarter.
Exactly. It's about being strategic.
Yeah.
So where do we start?
Yeah, where do we start? What are some strategies to streamline this whole process?
Well, one thing that's become essential is automation.
Automation.
But it's not about replacing people with robots.
Right.
It's about using technology to make us better, to create a more efficient system overall.
So it's like giving your post-processing operation a tech upgrade.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Imagine this.
Okay.
You have sensors that monitor every step of the process, and they send all that data back to like a central hub.
Okay.
This lets you make adjustments in real time,
Okay.
prevent bottlenecks, and make sure everything's running smoothly.
So it's like your post-processing operation has its own nervous system.
That's a great way to think about it.
Constantly monitoring and adjusting.
And with AI getting better all the time,
Right.
we're seeing some really smart automation solutions.
Oh, like what?
Well, AI can analyze tons of data,
Right.
find patterns, predict problems,
Nick.
and even suggest things you might not think of.
So it's like having a virtual expert always watching over things.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But technology isn't the whole story,
You're
right?
right, it's not.
We also have to look at the workflow itself. Like, how do the different stages connect? How can we make that flow better?
Exactly. We have to think like detectives, looking for anything that's slowing us down, bottlenecks, redundancies, that kind of thing.
So it's like stepping back and seeing the big picture to figure out where things can be improved.
Exactly. And there's a technique called value stream mapping.
Value stream mapping.
It's a visual tool
Okay.
that helps you map out the entire
Oh,
process.
so you can see it all laid out.
Exactly. From the moment a part leaves the mold to the final inspection.
Like a roadmap of the post-processing journey.
Exactly. And by seeing it all laid out,
Yeah.
you can find those problem areas where things get stuck, where there are unnecessary steps. even where materials are being handled poorly.
So you can streamline the whole thing.
That's the goal.
Eliminate waste
yeah.
and make the process more efficient.
You got it. And once you've found those areas,
yeah.
you can start fixing them. Maybe you rearrange your workspace
okay.
or buy new equipment.
Right.
You might even need to completely rethink how you do certain tasks.
It's about being open to new ideas.
Absolutely. Thinking outside the box.
But optimizing a whole workflow, it can seem overwhelming.
I know what you mean.
Like, where do you even start?
Yeah. Well, one approach that works really well is lean manufacturing.
Lean manufacturing.
We talked about it a bit last time.
Right, right.
But it's so important.
So give me the rundown. What are the key principles?
Okay, so lean manufacturing is about eliminating waste.
Okay.
Anything that doesn't add value to your product is waste.
Gotcha.
You want to streamline everything, make your workers more powerful, and always be looking for ways to improve.
So it's not just about speed.
No.
It's about being smart and efficient.
Exactly. And yeah. one of the best lean tools is the 5S system.
5S.
We talked about it before.
Right. Organizing your workspace.
Yeah. It's amazing how much of a difference that makes.
It really is.
A messy workspace can really slow you down.
Yeah. It can cause mistakes too.
It can.
And even accidents.
That's right.
But with 5S,
yeah.
you create a much better environment.
Exactly. Everything is organized. Tools are easy to find. Work just flows better.
It creates a sense of calm and order.
It does.
Which leads to better work.
Exactly. And 5S is not just about the physical stuff.
Right.
It's about standardizing your processes.
Okay.
Using visual cues
uh-huh.
and creating a culture where everyone is always looking to improve.
So it becomes part of how you do things.
Exactly. It's not just a one-time thing. But even with all that,
okay.
we still need to talk about resource management.
Right. Making sure you have the right resources.
Yeah. People, equipment, materials.
All working together.
It's like conducting an orchestra. You have to make sure everyone's in sync and ready to play. And it starts with having skilled people.
Skilled people?
People who are well-trained.
Okay, so investing in your workforce is crucial.
It really is.
Not just the initial training, but ongoing development as well.
Exactly. You have to keep your team's skills sharp. The industry is always changing,
uh-huh.
so they need to be able to adapt.
What about equipment?
Equipment is another big one. You got to keep those machines running smoothly.
Right. Regular maintenance and repairs.
Exactly.
It's like taking your car in for a tune-up.
That's a great analogy. It prevents those big problems down the road.
And what about materials?
Materials management is all about balance.
Right. Having enough,
uh-huh.
but not too much.
Exactly. You don't want to run out, but you also don't want to have a ton of stuff just sitting around. Thankfully, there's software that can help.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It can track your materials.
Okay.
Predict what you'll need in the future.
Wow.
And even order things for you automatically.
That's amazing. So you always have what you need when you need it.
Exactly. No more scrambling at the last minute. So to sum it up.
Okay.
When you manage your people, your equipment, and your materials well,
uh-huh.
your whole post-processing operation just flows better.
Smoother, more efficient.
That's it. It all works together.
It's like those perfectly synchronized scenes in action movies.
I know what you mean. Everything clicking into place. But even with all this,
yeah.
we can't forget about the human element.
The human element? What do you mean?
Even with all the technology,
right.
we still need human skill. For ingenuity.
Yeah.
Craftsmanship.
I see.
The best post-processing operations are the ones that find that balance between people and machines.
It's not about replacing people. It's about working together.
Exactly. People bring creativity, problem-solving skills, that big picture thinking.
Yeah.
While machines bring precision and speed.
It's like a dance.
It is. A well-choreographed dance.
Where each partner brings something unique to the table.
That's a great way to put it.
So when you find that balance,
yeah.
you get amazing results.
For results you wouldn't get with either one alone.
So it's about using the best of both worlds.
Absolutely.
To achieve something truly special.
That's what we're aiming for.
But finding that balance, it takes work.
It does.
You need planning, training,
uh-huh.
and a willingness to try new things.
Exactly. You have to be open to change.
Okay, so before we move on,
yeah.
what's the one thing you want our listeners to remember from this part of our deep dive?
That's a good question.
I think it's this.
The efficiency in post-processing is not about working harder. It's about working smarter.
I like it though.
Finding creative solutions.
Right.
Embracing technology.
Right.
Empowering your team. It's about creating a system that just works.
So it's about thinking strategically.
Exactly. And when you do that,
yeah.
you can achieve incredible things. Better quality, lower costs, and happier customers.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break.
All right.
But we'll be right back with the final part of our deep dive.
Looking forward to it.
We'll be talking about even more ways to optimize your post-processing.
It's going to be good.
Stay tuned. We're back and ready for the final part of our deep dive into injection molding post-processing.
It's been a great conversation.
It has. We've covered so much.
Mm-hmm.
From specific techniques to those big picture strategies.
Right.
But now we'll bring it back to you, the listener. You're the one who's going to take all this and actually use it.
Yeah.
So what's that one thing, that one big idea you want to take away from this?
Good question. I think it's this. Post-processing is not an afterthought. It's an opportunity.
An opportunity.
Yeah.
I like that. It's not just something you have to do.
Right.
It's a chance to really make your product better.
To make it special. To make it stand out.
And to do that, you need the right tools.
You do.
We've talked about so many, from manual deburring to all these fancy automation systems, right? So it's about knowing which tool to use when and how to use them effectively.
And how to combine them. Sometimes you need more than one technique.
Right, right.
To get that perfect result.
So it's like building your post-processing toolkit.
Exactly.
And becoming a master craftsperson.
You got it.
But it's also about those efficiency principles we talked about.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's your workflow, lean manufacturing, or technology.
Yeah, right.
It's always about working smarter.
Smarter, not harder.
And always looking for ways to improve.
Always improving, never stop.
And a big part of that is having a great team.
It is.
A team that's not just skilled, but also empowered.
Empowered.
They need to understand why they're doing what they're doing.
The why behind the what.
Okay.
Exactly. They need to be willing to learn and experiment.
And to be passionate about creating great products.
Absolutely. That passion makes all the difference.
It's about creating a culture of excellence.
It is, where everyone feels like they own the process.
And they're driven to do their best.
That's what you want.
And that starts with leadership.
It does. Yeah. Leaders who invest in their people.
Right.
Create a culture of open communication.
Uh-huh.
Encourage new ideas and challenges.
So it's about creating an environment where people feel valued.
Yeah.
And respected.
And inspired.
And when you have that kind of team.
It's amazing what you can accomplish.
Yeah.
You can tackle any problem, use any technology,
right,
and really push the boundaries of what's possible.
So it's not just about having a capable team.
No.
It's about having a motivated and engaged team.
A team that's excited to come to work.
And make a difference.
Exactly. And that excitement is contagious.
It is.
It spreads to your customers, uh-huh, your suppliers, everyone you work with. It becomes part of who you are.
Part of your brand, your identity.
Exactly. It's your competitive advantage.
So it's about building a reputation for excellence.
For delivering products that go above and beyond.
That's what post-processing is all about.
It is, yeah.
Taking something raw.
Yeah.
And making it into something truly special.
Something that makes you proud.
I think that's a perfect way to end our discussion.
I think so too.
Post-processing is more than just a step. It's a chance to create something amazing. To unleash your creativity, your skills, your passion.
But remember, it doesn't end here.
The journey continues.
The world of manufacturing is always changing. New technologies, materials, challenges. You got to keep learning and adapting.
Always stay curious.
That's the key.
So that brings us to the end of our deep dive into injection molding post-processing.
It's been fun.
We hope you've learned a lot.
I hope so.
And maybe you've even been inspired to try some new things.
That's what we want.
But remember, you're not alone in this. There are so many people out there just like you who are passionate about manufacturing.
Right.
Connect with them. Share what you know.
And learn from each other.
Build a community of excellence.
A network of support and inspiration.
Because together, we can achieve incredible things. So go out there.
Yeah.
Experiment, innovate, and create.
Create something amazing. And never stop learning.
That's the spirit of the deep dive.
It is.
Until next time. Keep exploring and keep pushing the limits of what's possible.